Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
Breast out because that was the symbol of life.
where the Western civilization came over, missionaries, whatever, and told them that their bodies were nasty, they needed to be covered up. They made their bodies no longer sacred when they're used to that. We talked about how the woman, one physician said that the black African-American body was hot and lusty, and all we want to do is have sex all the time, which was never true, but that was indoctrinated into us. We talked about the ritual of when you got pregnant, when you had sex, and how important that was that you didn't do that. We talked about the idea that even though the male would get the girl pregnant, that he still had to financially take care of the child, even though the parents were totally against it. What else did we talk about? We talked about the role models. We talked about, my God, we talked about a lot. Let's see. When our babies or our ancestors, let me say that, when our ancestors, women ancestors, finally came over to the other side, there was a new world order, and with the new world order came the new sexual order. We talked about that, and I think that's where we left off at. Yeah, that's where we left off at. It says, our next several hundred years, a new sexual order emerged for the black women in the new world that sabotaged everything that they grew up with. Everything that they knew was part of their traditions and their rituals that was eliminated once they came to America or overseas. Okay, it says there were six ways how the new sexual order took place and how it affected our women. Now, we talked about sex became a negative experience. And the reason why it became a negative experience is because once the women were here, the first thing they did, once the girls, child, whatever, females came over, the first thing happened to them, they were raped. That was the first thing that happened. That was the first invitation or initiation into the new world, was that they were raped. As a result of the rape, virginity was no longer sacred anymore. And it wasn't expected of women because of that. They had in their mind that it didn't matter, regardless of the circumstances. It was assumed that we wanted white men on top of us automatically. It says sexual intercourse between blacks and whites seemed to have begun as soon as the former was introduced into America. Many white men and women came to think of the black woman as basically immoral, loose, and easy. Have we? I wonder, have we changed the mindset? Now, they automatically said this about us, that we're loose and easy, so take us. Come on. But in reality, however, in order to avoid being severely punished, black women had to submit to any white man who made sexual demands on them. If some were given a choice, Cynthia's decision was typical. She could either accept or reject her master's proposal to accompany him to another state and become his mistress and housekeeper. If she rejected him, however, he threatened to sell her to the worst plantation there was. I wonder which plantation that was the worst. I really would like to know that one. So either way it goes, she was in a no-win situation. So let's look at the foundation. And I say we because I consider myself black. my ancestors. That's the foundation we were built on to come to the women that we are now and how we're being treated, not only by white men, but by black men, and we're going to get into that too. Okay, and I think I gave you an example. I think we've already talked about the part where I talked about the young lady who was beaten all the time, 14 years old, 1850, yeah, and where she was taken by a 70-year-old farmer, and she wound up beating him because she said enough. She was sick, and she was pregnant, and she didn't want him touching her. So think about that. When, you know, if you say you don't want to do something, you should have a right to not do nothing, right? But because you were a slave, you didn't have no rights. You were property, so you had no right to... you had no right to say no. You know, it was all right. But in Missouri at this time, the law stated that it was unlawful for a man to force sex upon any woman. The law also provided that if a woman killed a man who was trying to rape her, it could be considered a legitimate act of self-defense, not a crime. Celia's lawyer appealed to this, arguing that because the law protected any woman in this situation, the legislators must protect slave women too. The judge, listen to what the judge did. The judge disagreed. Celia was sentenced to death and hanged. Because just like I just quoted or just stated, women, black, African slaves were not considered women. They were considered property. Period. Another thing. If you did not resist the sex, that became the means to an end. Special living quarters, better food, or small gifts from men who sought your favors. So you became a prostitute. I'm just like amazed. So now you're telling me that males, white males, were always Johns? I mean, from the get-go, from history? I mean, that's what it's telling me. It says, still submitting to a white man was risky if these women began to think too much of themselves and demonstrated that they saw themselves as being more than slaves. They were often sold to another plantation by the wives and mothers of the men who had sexual relationships with them. Listen at that. Oh, my God. So rape was a – you were supposed to resist. You're not supposed to – oh, my God. I didn't know that. So if you resisted, that made it more validated opposed to you saying, you know what, of course I'll do this with you. You don't have to rape me. I'll let you. So if after a while you became to think of yourself too much, oh, my God, I think why we're so mixed up. It says captive women could not necessarily control the men with whom they had children, but there is evidence that they made difficult choice decisions about whether to give birth to children who would themselves become slaves. While some women were described as honored to have the MARSA, which is M-A-R-S-A, there are also numerous accounts of others who used a variety of devices. Now, let's talk about what the MARSA is. The MARSA is abortion. Back then, it was called the MARSA, M-A-R-S-A. Now we call it abortion. This is how they did it. These are the devices, such as a roll of rags and stick inserted into the vagina, or herbs and roots, or exercised excessively to terminate unwanted pregnancies. There was no doctors involved, you guys. Nobody was making money off of it. These women did their own type of abortions. A black mother in 1863 reported, "I used to have one baby every Christmas, but when I had six, I put a stop to it and had only one every other year." Man. That, okay. Okay. Let's see. I'm stumped on that one right there. All right, then. So she started controlling when she had babies. And now, back in the part of rituals and traditions of African-American women, I mean, of the Africans back then, before they became slaves, the women could kind of measure out when they wanted to have their children. But she actually did the same thing, but she just found another way of doing it. Back then, you know, you didn't have baby. Here she realized she was having a baby every year. Hold up. When is this going to stop? So she put a stop to it herself. All right. It says, let's see, in the novel Beloved, Toni Morrison explored this issue, contradicting the myth that enslaved women did not resist the loss of control of their sexuality and their reproductive rights. Their decisions may have been limited, but some women assumed as much control as they could when faced with the possibility of bearing or raising children, only to have them abused or sold away. This pressure increased after 1808 when legislature against importing slaves created increased demand. Masters who specialized in trading slaves became slave breeders. Slave breeders. We're going to stop right there, and I want to throw some music at you. So, we shall return. Surprise for you. You probably know this voice. a very familiar voice, been around for years. All you got to do is think Motown. When she was with the Supremes. Love Child. Wow. Okay. Let's get back to Stolen Women by Dr. Gail Wyatt. And where we left off at, we were talking about the idea that now the slave masters became slave breeders. You know what a slave breeder is? Huh. They bred us like bred horses. They matched us up with the ones that they wanted us to have sex with and to have babies so they can keep selling us. That's what a slave breeder is. Man. Oh, they specialized in slave breeding. You can't do that now. Okay. It says, this concentrated heavily in states along the Atlantic coast and the border states. Breeding was not simply a matter of slaves impregnating slaves. It was about, according to James Roberts, as freed Africans, described how breeding was accomplished. established on the plantations where he lived. He said 50 to 60 slave women were kept solely for whites to impregnate them. Man, from these women, 20 to 25 children were born and sold away when they were ready for market. Wait a minute, did you say ready for market? What is this? Chickens, eggs, pigs, cows? No, these were human babies. Can you believe it? Sold for market. Man, a higher price could be demanded for children who were fathered by whites than for those who were fathered by slaves. So, the whiter in your blood made you a higher price. Isn't that something? I'm laughing because I'm just like, man, this is crazy. So it was actually better business to mix the genes of Africans and whites. Huh. Let's see. So the more white you had in you, and that's why we act the way we act. There it goes right there. Let me repeat what that said. So it was actually better business to mix the genes of Africans and whites. There we get that concept of the lighter you are, the better you're treated. Right there. Deborah White is an author of Ain't I a Woman. She described how white Southerners bragged about their, quote-unquote, breeding wenches. The way they bragged about their horses, cows, and mules. Just imagine. I can imagine what they said. Yeah, look at them sturdy legs. Yeah, they can go up in the air a couple of times. Yeah, turn around. Look at that rump. Oh, yeah. Look at them teeth. Check out her breath. Oh, yeah, she's good breeding. Good breeding material. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Oh, man. Now, James Madison, listen to this. James Madison, the former president of the United States, he didn't conceal his pride in his slave women. He bragged about them, too. He was one of the ones who bragged. Man. One-third of his slaves were under 5 years of age, which indicated that breeding took place on his plantation as well. So he was helping populate his prized possession so they can get ready to go to the market. All righty then. Okay, it says, according to one eyewitness, the clothing of slaves in many cases comfortable, in many cases it was far from being so. I have very often seen slaves whose tattered rags were neither comfortable or decent. Children sometimes went naked until they were big enough to work. So, you're saying through the winter months, through the hot summers, these babies walked around butt naked, no clothes on, no shoes on, until they were old enough. So there was no privacy, no intimacy of their bodies not being shown. This is why I say why women should really, truly, truly understand your past. You know, we want to holler, this has nothing to do. Yes, it does. Because you are part of those generations that came out of all this disrespect and disregard of us as women, as us as Africans, as us as being black. It says they received, it was easy. beings, many blacks had scars and unhealed wounds on their body. So just imagine infection and all this bacteria and all this, and they're walking around with all these open wounds. It says, Mrs. Barr saw a Negro girl about 13 years old waiting around the table with a single garment, and that in the cold weather. Arms and bare feet wretchedly swollen, arms burnt and full of sores from exposure. All the Negroes under pure years, whoever that is, care made a wretched appearance. So they didn't take care of you guys. They didn't take care of us. We weren't that important to be taken care of. Man! It says being naked became commonplace when it was sacred back in our country, in Africa. Now it's, you walk around with everything out. Now remember when we discussed the first part, when we said the only thing was out was bare, was the breast. The bottom part was all covered up because that was sacred. Now you see we're walking around with nothing on. It was not unusual to see a woman who had been stripped naked, tied to a stake and whipped with a hard saw or club, which was eventually broken over her body. Respect for your body was no longer determined by moral or social protocol. What did I just say? So just imagine. Stripped naked, tied to a stake, whipped with a hard saw or club, which was eventually, so they beat them until they broke the instrument they were beating you with. That's some beating. Now, think about being naked, tied to a stake, and being beat with a hard saw or a club. It says she describes, this is Deborah White, describes how the bodies of women were handled at auction. Their stomach and breasts were often kneaded to determine their fertility. Kneaded means pulled on, stretched, pushed, prodded, kneaded. You know, like you knead dough. You know how you take and rub dough to get it soft? Keep on. That's what she's saying was done to our bodies to determine whether or not we were fertile. What? Auctioneers invited potential owners to feel their ribs, look inside their mouths, examine their teeth, and determine their fitness for work. It says, for Africans, privacy and modesty had no place in the New World. You were stripped of that. That's why I say this all the time. Look at your past. Look what we came from. What we thought was sacred back in our world, when we come to the new world, which is the new sexual world order, we're no longer, it's not private. It's not sacred. Everybody can touch and feel and grab and push and at the same time stripped you of who you were. Women in the fields often had to lift their skirts in order to bend and work effectively, an act that was frequently taken as an indication of their willingness to exhibit themselves. Oh, so the ones who actually had clothes on, they're working in the field and they got these long, hot skirts on, and they're lifting the skirts up to get them out the way, but because they probably didn't have any undergarments on, you were displaying yourself. How psychosis is, oh, come on. How crazy is that? I'm lost. Okay. It says, similarly, it was difficult to maintain much privacy within the small crowded slave quarters or dormitories that held from 10 to 100 men. The buildings resembled a tenement. The rooms were small, unlit, unheated, and poorly constructed. Families were usually housed together. Young children sometimes slept in different areas from young men and women, an indication that, when possible, the black captives attempt to provide at least some degree of privacy for themselves. So while they're under the roof, scantily dealing with all this crap, they actually try to put together some type of sense of privacy by separating themselves. Other incidents made it clear that our bodies were not regarded with the same respect that was accorded to other women. Female slaves were used as human guinea pigs for physicians who were attempting to perfect gynecological surgery during the slave era, which I did not know. Okay. Let me come down a little bit. Let me throw you some Dionne Warwick to kind of calm me down. Just amazed.
Go way back, guys. All right.
Now that you're gone.
All right, we're back again with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman, and it's so appropriate the name of this radio show to what we're talking about. This is just, like, mind-boggling, and you guys got to hear this. You got to hear this. I'm going to repeat what I said prior to us taking a break. For example, between 1845 and 1849, Anarka, a slave, endured 300, let me say this again, 300 gynecological surgeries in a private hospital in the backyard of a physician who ultimately applied his technique to wealthy white women. I'm amazed. I cannot believe this. You guys, I'm not crazy. Okay. Let me go back a little bit here. Female slaves were used as human guinea pigs for physicians who were attempting to perfect gynecological surgeries during the slave era. For example, between 1845 and 1849, Anarka, a slave, endured 300 gynecological surgeries in a private hospital in a backyard of a physician who ultimately applied his techniques to wealthy white women. What? While these surgeries were performed on the slaves free of charge, the effect they had on women and their bodies must have been endured at a tremendous cost to their health. Can we say the experiment with, the Tuskegee experiment. Can we talk about that? Can we compare that with that? Can we talk about genocide? Is that another form of genocide? Could it be? One lady, one young girl, 300 surgeries. Oh, my God. I bet you she had some. She was messed up. I don't know how else to say it. I'm just going to say it like that. She was messed up. And I feel so sorry for her. Despite that they did it free of charge. What is that? Okay. Now, we're still working with the sixth wave that the sexual order in the New World took place, the new sexual order. And we're talking about, we just got through with one and two, privacy and modesty were not respected. That was number two. Now we're on number three. Number three said group solidarity was difficult to maintain. Now, you got to remember, tribal-wise, in Africa, you were part of a tribe. You had a village. Everybody was together. Well, when they came to the New World, quote unquote, this was difficult to maintain. Excuse me. It said Africans and their descendants had to use indirect methods to protect one another. They even relied on musical lyrics as a means of communication. For example, the words of Negro spirituals relayed information unbeknownst to the whites who heard them, focusing on impending danger or plans to escape slavery through the Underground Railroad. So that's where the hymns of old we sing in churches nowadays. These were slave hymns. And this was the way that they talked back and forth, communicated with each other, because guess what? They didn't know no other way. They couldn't read. They couldn't write. So they sung back and forth to each other. It says, a direct expression of concern from or for the group was rarely successful, as this story points out. And this is a story right here. It says, Maria was a 13-year-old house servant. One day, receiving no response to her call, the mistress began searching the house for her. Finally, she opened the parlor door, and there was the child with her master. The mistress beat the child and locked her in the smokehouse. For 2 weeks, the child, the girl, was constantly whipped. Some of the elderly servants attempted to plead with the mistress on Maria's behalf. The mistress' reply was typical. She'll never know better in the future. After I'm done with her, she'll never do it again. She will never do the like again through ignorance. I don't know. That's the way the lady was talking, the white woman was talking. Okay. So, she walks in. Now, she's not going to blame it on the man. You know, we're good at, don't want to blame the man for it. Because she didn't just walk up in there. He probably summoned her to come in there and be with him. Because, okay, I guess it's like this. As long as I don't see you do it, it's fine. But when I catch you doing it, guess what? There's hell to pay. That's basically what that was. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Because he's been sleeping with all these women all the time. He's the master. He can do that. Why all of a sudden now it's a problem? Because it's actually in her face. Wow. Sounds like today. Okay. Now, it says, one of the greatest obstacles to maintaining a solid group identity resulted from the division of labor between the slave owners and the fields. If you worked in the house, you were more likely to be better clothed and fed, and you could develop special skills. Your children sometimes had opportunities to learn to read and write, and they had less strenuous housework. That's why there's a difference. Do you see how a difference in how we feel about each other now has been created? It's been established. If you worked in the field, you were treated differently from when you worked in the house. I mean, and that's why we got this crab in the barrel mentality going on. It was the birth of it was back during slavery time. There were consequences, however, for the privilege of being a house slave. Let's see what it is. The closer your proximity to the big house, the more likely it was that you were involved in sexual liaisons with a white family member on a routine basis. Wow, that means that whenever they wanted something, you was right there. They can come get you. These unions created children whose skin color, features, and hair texture confirmed that sex was part of the bargain for them being a house slave. So you gave up as a woman when you were a house nigga. I'm just going to say it like that. I don't like to use the word, but that's what you were back then. As a house nigga, you had special privileges. But in order to keep those privileges, you had to have sex with the family. They didn't have to come and rape you. That was one of the things that you had to do. That was one of your rewards, I guess, or stipulations. Let's put it like that, stipulations. Okay, let's stop right there. I'm going to play my last two songs for you.
If I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
and you were my man, she tears you down, darling, she says you're nothing at all,
nothing at all.
But I'll pick you up, darling,
pick you up when you fall,
when she lets you fall. You're like a diamond,
shining.
If I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
if I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
And I didn't give out the call number. I'm so sorry, you guys. I just got so excited when I was reading this. We called the 347-677-1749. I did this. I added 31. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I added 30 more minutes on because I'm really, really into this. I think this is. As you know, that was the Honeycombs. One ad. Okay. Now, let's talk about the privileged Negro. As we know, the stipulation was if you was a house Negro or Negress, you had to give up the booty. I'm sorry, I'm just going to break it on down. You had to give up the booty. That was one of the stipulations in order for you to have that privilege. Your children came out a different than, you know, did not fulfill kids. And it says, the fair-skinned population was encouraged by their masters to regard themselves as better than those who toiled in the fields. That's where we get, there we go again, the foundation, the realization that because I'm lighter than you, I'm better than you. And, you know, we want to say, oh, no, that's not really, it's not going on today. It is reality. It's still here. It hasn't gone anywhere. It has, and we've entrenched it, birthed it, kept it growing in our generation. Because I know it's in my family from here. I do. I know there's a difference in the way. Now, you had some rebels, but I noticed it in my grandparents. I did notice that in my grandparents. So it was, it continued to reinvent itself. That if you were lighter, you were better. Okay. Nevertheless, it says, in reality, their mothers suffered privilege abusive or coerced relationships. Nevertheless, the schism that resulted from alleged class differences based on skin color grew both within and outside of the slave quarters. In essence, group solidarity, particularly the historical pattern of drawing on a group membership for individual identity, I am because we are, which we didn't talk about that. That was in the front part of the book, the early part of the book, about that was one of the rituals, and that was how they were. You meant to be something when you were part of somebody or a group of somebody, individuals. It became precarious. Self-preservation was sometimes maintained at the expense of someone else, and frequently the group was powerless to protect the individual from the master. So being in a group didn't mean nothing anymore. It stopped. If you were in a group back in your country, one person came to get you, you were protected. But now it was that crab in the barrel mentality, or every man for himself, started to be birthed. Needless to say, there was little group solidarity among black and white women. Either. That didn't exist with them either. It says the image of the childlike and fragile white woman who could not endure hard labor solely replaced expectations that white women could labor in the field, even sustain a passionate sexual relationship with their husbands. Oh, so now we got competition. According to them, it's competition time. All right, okay. It says what they either could and would not do, black women were called upon to do it. Both women, black and white, became important pieces of fabric of the life in the growing agricultural South, but always in contrast to each other. So they kept them at odds with each other, even though now they can do as much as we could to a certain extent, and what they couldn't do, we had to do it. We became almost rivals. rivalry, sort of. Now it says, this is number four. That was number three. That was the end of number three, which is group solidarity was difficult to maintain because we explained why. We no longer was considered tribal. That tribal or village type attitude was no longer there. It dissipated in the new world, in the new sexual order. Excuse me. Number four says women were often unprepared for their roles. Well, by 1850, the rituals of preparing girls for their roles as African women had been outlawed in America. It had been outlawed. You know how I was saying earlier, the role models, the elder women, prepared the young girls to their roles as wives and young women. That was, they said, when you come to America, all that stops. Do as the Romans do. I guess that was the philosophy then, the theory. African women had been out, okay, I'm sorry. With the passing of time, new training replaced traditional socialization of girls by women. Many of the old customs were not tolerated by slave owners, and slaves risked severe punishment if they practiced African rituals, which some of them did. So if you got caught doing what you knew, what you grew up with, your traditions, your rituals, you were punished. How dare you bring that African crap over here? That's basically what they were saying. Excuse me. In spite of all the hardship the women knew their daughters would encounter, they generally did not inform them about normal sexual development or about their emerging sexuality. Because all the stuff that they were taught, that they were told to do back at home, how to get the girl prepared, they couldn't do that. So it kind of went mute on them. They couldn't do it, you know. So it messed up the flow of the way things used to be when they were in their country. I'm sorry, you guys. Okay, I apologize for that. Okay. Now, this guy named Abraham Gutsman, he wrote a book called The Black Family from Freedom to Slavery, 1750 to 1925. One woman, remembering her discovery of her menstruation, recalled, "When it first came on, I ran, trying to make it stop. I was trying to stop it, for I didn't know whether I was going to get a killing for it or not. I didn't know what it was." Now, she's having her menstruation. If back in the country, in the old country, or back at home, she would have been able to be explained to her what was going on, how her body was developing, but that was mute here in the States. So she was scared. She didn't know what to do. It says mothers might explain the babies. Mothers might explain that babies come from hollow logs. Real information, however, was withheld until it was felt to be necessary. Because of the impending trauma that slave mothers knew their daughters would encounter, theirs was not a normal human existence. As a result, the descendants of Africa's stolen women did not know what to expect of their bodies as they matured and entered into puberty. Puberty. But in America, there was no proper time to be initiated into sex. Instruction occurred whenever a random and often traumatic event took place. It usually conveyed what a girl should try to avoid rather than what she might look forward to experiencing. Okay, you come off the ship, you've been raped. You get raped right off the ship. And then you're raped continuously. You don't know what's going on. And your mom wasn't allowed to tell you. According to this, they stripped us. That is why the book is called Stolen Women. Stripped us of what was ours, stripped us of our rituals, our traditions, who we were. They stripped us of that. Africa's stolen women. Older men and women did teach the young about courtship rituals. The dream of establishing lasting relationships remained a weapon against despair. Just imagining, man, I could get, you know, I meet this guy. It's all right for me to date him and everything. It kind of helped a little bit with dealing with all that you lived in. The buck and mire, the long hours in the fields, the whippings, the rapes. You look forward to a little bit of something good. It says, through oral history, this aspect of African socialization managed to survive. So that did survive. In Africa, the slaves remembered families had a lot to say in selecting their children's mates. If your parents did not raise you, who could give you permission to marry? Who would find a suitable partner for you? The answer was simple. The elders available could. That, you know, all of that became out of whack once they stole us from Africa. Now, let's talk about number five. Sexual contact between family members was inevitable. Let me say that again. Sexual contact between family members was inevitable. And I truly understand this part. It says, as a consequence of abused and forced breeding, family ties and relationships were severely disrupted during slavery. The results were often devastating and confusing. John Blassigame, the editor of Slave Testimony, Two Centuries of Letters, Speeches, Interviews, and Autobiographies, included this slave's comment. My grandmother was her master's daughter, and my mother was her master's daughter, and I was my master's son. So, who created incest?
It wasn't us.
Okay. Because families were so often separated, the inevitable sometimes occurred. Isaac D. Williams, a former slave, told a young mother who was sold by her master to a distant plantation. She was forced to leave her infant son, who was just beginning to walk. 19 years later, all ties between the two having been broken, her child was sold to the same plantation. Working near each other in the field, the two strangers became attached, and after a time were married. Sometime thereafter, the mother noticed a peculiar scar on her husband's head and asked him how he got it. He told her that it was as a child, he fell out of his mother's arms into a fire and got badly burned. Why? Screamed the poor woman. You are my own son. Wow. She married her son. Oh. You try not to have hate in your heart. You try not to be angry. But damn it. Okay. Got that out. From all accounts, these were not infrequent episodes. Enslaved African families and their descendants were highly dependent upon the extended family to raise and care for children and one another. The extended family frequently included friends and other relations who served as surrogates for the biological parents. In their own society, Africans were accustomed to raising one another's children. This fact no doubt helped them to endure the separation of their families. So that was another ritual or tradition that they were able to keep. Excuse me. It says, to endure separation of their families and to incorporate children born of other parents into a family unit as well as they did. This is the village concept of child rearing, and it's as important today as it was 100 years ago. It takes a village to raise a child, which we do not use anymore. Okay. We're going to take a break. I need to take a drink. So we will be taking a break, and we will be back.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You see me around the neighborhood, and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. My teacher tells me in this country, we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
To help fight hunger in central Louisiana and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org.
Hi, this is Salita. I'm the host of Say Your Piece here on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll be back.
Oh,
severely limited. Can't do that today. You can't walk in nobody's house and grab their wife up and rape her and beat her and abuse her now. Can't do that nowadays. But the passive man is where this comes from. Because of the brainwashing of our men, and because of their manhood being stripped from them, because their manhood was stolen from them too, they had no say-so. They had no way of, they couldn't do anything. Man. Okay. It says, as a male slave attempted to protect his wife from abuse, he faced severe retribution. Some slaves pretended that they did not know how their wives were treated in order to avoid having to decide whether to attempt to protect them and face harsh punishment. Do you know how psychological damaging that is? Do you know how emotional and physical damaging that is to a person, watching their wives and being beat when they can't say nothing and do nothing? Can we imagine that? No, not in this day and time. We can't imagine that. It says, other slave men purposely formed relationships with women on other plantations so they did not have to helplessly witness the daily mistreatment of their mates. I'm going over to Roscoe's plantation and find my wife, because I don't want to see what's going on with her. As long as she's not around me, I don't have to feel obligated, or I don't have to feel the hurt and pain in my spirit knowing she's being mistreated. Excuse me. Today we would call this denial or lack of involvement perfect. I said passive, lack of involvement. I believe this is at this point in our history as African Americans that black men first began to be viewed by black women as unavailable men, lacking compassion as mates who were unwilling to fight for them. This, of course, is not true, but there is no doubt that being in a relationship with a black woman extracted a toll from a black man. It was heavy, heavily burdened on a black man to love us. Think about that. That's deep. That is deep. That is a burden to love us. And to, you can't protect us, so all you can do is love us. And if you was on another plantation from afar, man. Okay. We're going to finish this out because I got 3 minutes to go. It says, this, of course, is not, okay. But there's no doubt that being in a relationship with a black woman extracted a toll from a black man. It was risky, dangerous, and sometimes life-threatening. How is that for us as women to feel that we do this to our men? We become risky, dangerous, and life-threatening to love us. Man! Oh. One more factor took its toll. Contrary to traditional family constellations, slave children by law belong to the slave mother alone rather than to both parents. So, let's think about that. Deadbeat dads, single women raising children, could that be the beginning or the foundation? And it says right here, whether slave or master, men who fathered the children of slave women no longer had to support them. What? That was a commonplace back then. History repeats itself. eventually for slave women, sex for procreation with an unanimous partner, with an anonymous, excuse me, partner became more common, though less acceptable than sex within the context of family life. So she can sleep with it. Well, anybody was sleeping with her because, man, she's a slave. So she could have babies for anybody, but she had to take care of them. So to me, that sounds like today. What do you think, you guys? I think it's almost like today. This is scary. You guys, I am so excited with this. So this is what we're going to do tomorrow. We come back tomorrow, same time, same back channel, and we're going to start with the psychological burden this was on Africans. Okay? So I want to say thank you guys for listening. I will be back tomorrow. Have a blessed evening. Can't wait to finish this off. But I love this. I'm hoping you guys are loving it too. I'm trying to find my... Okay, here we go. Have a great night and bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.